Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of Uncanny Treks. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Today, we are winding down the Mark Waid, Mike Waringo run of Fantastic Four. We are looking at the last two volumes of it. That's Volume 5, Disassembled, Volume 6, Rising Storm. It's issues 514 through 524. Matt, how you doing this evening?
Doing pretty well, Bob. Fantastic Four is just great comics. And the way you framed it the other week, where you're talking about there are these explorers on a journey. And this isn't the first time I've seen this, but it reminded me in this issue, they use the word Imaginauts. And that to me is exactly what Fantastic Four are. They just go weird places, do weird things all the time. Don't ever get a break.
That's even the title of the first trade of the Waid Waringo run Imaginauts that we skip. Not because it's bad, just because it is more Star Trek-y, more Twilight Zone adventures, right? And I just didn't think it would make for a great hook for this run. I thought better to start with Unthinkable, which is still probably the best story in the arc, or the best story in the run, rather.
Right. We're covering this after we covered Hickman's run, Jonathan Hickman's, and apparently, from what I've been reading, Bob, they're going to pull heavily from his run for the Fantastic Four film.
So I always say this about superhero movies, but that seems a bad idea to me because I feel like viewers need to understand the Fantastic Four before you do the Hickman run. Does that make sense? The Hickman run is not the thing you want to start with.
With the Franklin part, they're going to start. I really do think Franklin's going to be a big piece of this.
Interesting.
So you shot it down the last couple of weeks. I really do think we're going to see the Jonathan Hickman Franklin at some point.
That's crazy, man. Yeah. It's also funny because for a long, long time, Franklin was seen as the biggest problem with the Fantastic Four as a comic, both in that he was an annoying kid character for most of the 70s and the 80s, and the fact that he has these godlike powers that make him a very convenient deus ex machina, or a very inconvenient deus ex machina, because you're always having to explain why Franklin can't do something. It's funny that we're at a place with superhero storytelling and in the wake of the two Avengers Infinity Gauntlet movies, in the wake of all that, where it's just, nah, Franklin's not a problem. We're just going straight to it.
They're just going to go for all the high-powered heroes. You know, who's the dude in Thunderbolts that we were talking about last week?
Century.
And you got him. You've got Adam Warlock showed up.
Guardians of the Galaxy 3, which was not bad. They handled Warlock pretty well, about as well as you can. Warlock originally debuted in the Fantastic Four.
A lot of characters here, Bob, that I never thought I'd see on film, which is cool. You know, that's something that I like to think about. But you just hate it, period. You don't like seeing heroes. You don't think comic books transfer to film very well.
No, he sent me the poster for the new Fantastic Four movie, or the latest poster, and this looks terrible. In general, the Fantastic Four movie looks terrible, but I also just mean the costuming, the colors, the composition of the poster looks terrible.
Bob didn't like the aesthetics of the poster, but I agree with him because at this point now, anytime I look at a poster, I'm just looking to see if there's like AI generated in it. I need to fix my brain. I don't know how to do that because now I'm looking at it and I can't enjoy it because did they just like make Mr. Fantastic or did they just say make Pedro Pascal look like Mr. Fantastic and then it showed up? The actual graphic design itself doesn't look that great.
I want to be clear, too. I don't hate the aesthetic that they're going for on the poster. I like that early 60s sort of astrofuturist aesthetic. I don't like New Frontier the comic, but I like Darwin Cook's art on New Frontier the comic. I love Star Trek. I love that early 60s astrofuturist aesthetic. I don't object to the aesthetic in general. I just think it's really poorly executed on that Fantastic Four poster. And just in general, there's something about superheroes that works in animation and it works on the page, but it almost never works in live action.
I want them to go back to superhero posters with the actual actors in them, not illustrated or drawings like they used to do with the Superman ones. If you looked at the cover of the Superman box of the VHS, legit had all the characters. It was cool. And they were actually them, not illustrated versions or this CGI type thing they do now with it.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know the Superman box art, but my counteroffer would be they should just pay comics artists to do realistic-looking illustrations. That would make me happy, and it would give people who deserve a movie payout.
The box art, their art would be displayed all over the place, their covers, not just in comic book stores.
That's a real issue. I can't remember the specifics of this controversy, but I remember hearing about was, if I remember the details right, for the Hawkeye show on Disney+, they used David Aja's art in the promotion of it, but they didn't pay him. They didn't credit him. I also love the Fantastic Four. They're one of my favorite teams. But in a certain sense, we have looked at what I would consider my two favorite modern runs of the Fantastic Four. My two favorite 21st century runs. So there is other good 21st century stuff, and there's certainly good 20th century Fantastic Four stuff, but we have kind of looked at the creme de la creme, you know?
Appreciate that, Bob, because I've enjoyed both of these runs tremendously. But at the same time, my only exposure to Fantastic Four comic books, there was a version of the comic that released as a number one that was based on the animated series. I don't know if you remember this. And I own that one issue, and that's like the only real Fantastic Four comic I've read, other than watching the movies and seeing the cartoons.
Was it an adaptation of the pilot of Fantastic Four?
I believe it was, yes.
Because that's usually, the DC ones were usually original stories that were done in the animated style, but the Marvel ones were usually adaptations of that.
The X-Men run they did. It's cool to see it in comic form, but at the same time, you're like, eh, this isn't really changing much, because they do it in the style of the show. So
this is more of a problem for the X-Men show, but I think for the Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four, it's even more of a problem because the Spider-Man and Fantastic Four 90s cartoons are based pretty closely on comics. And so you're getting into a copy of a copy of a copy.
Yeah, you're retelling the same story 3,000 times, which apparently the new movie is going to glaze over their origin story, which the other two movies focused incredibly on the Fantastic Four.
I agree with that.
Well, like you were saying, though, you need something other than the Franklin story to jump into Fantastic Four. I didn't really need much. I knew about them. I knew their powers. I knew they went to space.
Honestly, it sounds like the Christopher Nolan knockoff Fantastic Four from, was that already 10 years ago?
Yeah.
I never watched it, and by all accounts, it was horrible.
It wasn't Christopher Nolan.
Christopher Nolan knockoff.
Christopher Nolan did not direct a Fantastic Four movie. It's just he's saying it's in the style, and it sucked.
He might as well have. It couldn't have been any worse than Tenet.
Oh, it was terrible. This Fantastic Four movie. I could watch the other two. The one with the Rise of the Silver Surfer, and that one was fine with Jessica Alba. And then I watched the 90s one, and it was rough. I mean, it was more Fantastic Four than I saw in the 2015-2016 version.
I've just seen clips from the 90s one, and I've seen clips from the Silver Surfer one and the Yachts being on in the comic store, but I've never actually watched any of them. I'm just saying, though, that Christopher Nolan knockoff one from the last decade, it sounds like it tried to do what I would say you should do with the Fantastic Four, which is lean into the science fiction and the space rather than the superheroes, because that's something that makes it distinctive. I'm just owning that my advice, although badly executed, I'm sure, was a total failure 10 years ago.
You could see where they were going with it in doing that sci-fi piece, but it was, like you said, so poorly executed and dull and boring and immemorable and nothing really, there was no fun about it. Which, these comics were fun. I mean, there's a lot of seriousness going on, but these characters are fun characters to watch do things. You expect Johnny and the Thing to go at each other during the middle of a battle. You expect Sue and Reed, their husband and wife, they're going to act that way. That's the best part. That wasn't in that film.
That is one of the interesting things about the Fantastic Four and Spider-Man, is that they both can balance pretty low comedy and pretty high drama very, very well. And it's interesting to think that, you know, the most successful franchises for Marvel right now are the Avengers and the X-Men. And the X-Men have always been pretty low on the comedy and pretty high on the soap opera. I haven't read a lot of Avengers comics, especially have hardly read any Avengers comics from the 20th century and all the 20th century Avengers comics. I never get the sense that the Avengers are fun, which I think it maybe is one reason you hear a lot of people complaining about the Joss Whedon style of the MCU and the quippy, lame banter style of the MCU. And granted, if it had been the Fantastic Four that had been made big instead of the Avengers 10 years ago, probably people would still have the same justified complaint. But I do wonder if maybe it feels a little bit more artificial coming from the Avengers characters, who I don't think are designed to do both comedy and drama so well together. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And the other thing I want to note too, Bob, is both teams you mentioned, the Avengers and X-Men, have so many characters that the comedy angle is specific to certain ones who may not be in an issue. So, whereas with Fantastic Four, you've got the constant four team members, and you've got two that act like goofballs half the time.
Reed and Sue can be the straight people to Johnny and Ben's antics. It works well.
Whereas with Avengers, I don't even know who. I guess Iron Man would do some of the quips, maybe. Hawkeye.
Maybe, but that's maybe more recent Hawkeye. 20th century Hawkeye, from what little I've read, was maybe a little bit more dour and a little bit more serious.
You look at X-Men, it's pretty easy to see which characters there are your comedy relief and which are super serious soap opera.
Oh man, that is a fearful, the last thing and then I'm ready to move on, but that's just a fearful thing. Imagining Joss Whedon or Joss Whedon style being applied to Ben Grimm and Johnny Storm. Oh God, that makes me shudder.
Yeah, it'd be rough. I would not want to watch it. I imagine it would be a lot like The Flash in the DC would be the DC. That would be your Johnny Storm. And then your Thing, if I had to pick, let's see. There was really a giant character that just kind of...
Your Batfleck, probably.
Just that attitude, yeah. I could see that.
Yeah. God, that's awful. All right. Shall we dive into something better than imagining how Joss Whedon would butcher the FF?
Yes, well, let's talk about this dysfunctional family.
All right. So usually we do these broken down by issue, but we figured we'd just break them down by arc this time. So we've got three arcs and then an epilogue issue. We'll tackle the arcs one at a time. The first arc is issues 514 through 516. As Matt said, it's called Dysfunctional. Matt, what goes down in the arc Dysfunctional?
So Bob, the wizard uses his daughter in a plan to create a new incarnation of the Frightful Four. And this is my first time ever hearing of the Frightful Four. Apparently, they're the opposites of the Fantastic Four, the Sinister Six of the FF.
Exactly right.
The Injustice Gang.
I think the Sinister Six does predate the Frightful Four, although I would have to go back and check on that. Usually, the Frightful Four is constant on the three male members. Sometimes there's variation, but I think most of the time it is Hydro Man, Wizard, and Trapster. Although I think the Beetle is sometimes in there, too. But usually it's the fourth female version varies. And do you know who the first female member of the Frightful Four was, Matt?
Not a clue.
Medusa from the Inhumans. I don't know if you remember in the Fantastic Four cartoon nebulously in your childhood memories, but they do the Frightful Four story with Medusa in the 90s Fantastic Four cartoon.
I completely forgot the Inhumans were even in that cartoon. I just know they made action figures of them.
They were only in a couple episodes, but it was still at least three and maybe four or five.
Well, in this case, you got... The female member is Salamandra. How do you say her name? Salandra?
I would say Salamandra.
She turns into a dragon later on, so that's kind of cool.
Ben has the nickname Sally for her, which I thought was hilarious. She also sometimes refers to herself as the dragon's daughter. I was remiss in my research and didn't think to go back and look. I think she might be a new character. I could see it going either way. I could see this being the first appearance of her, and they're just not making that big a deal of it. Or I could see her having a long history in the Fantastic Four that I've just forgotten about.
Let me say, too, on top of this, apparently Wizard and Salamandra had a daughter, and that's the daughter we were talking about earlier. Her name is Cole.
Cole, yeah.
Cole's got powers where she, like, it's anti-grav powers where she can make things fall apart by shaking up their inertia. But anyway, she can make things fall apart. It's cool.
I had totally forgotten about this angle with the wizard's kid. It really does set up a lot of the stuff we saw with the wizard and Hickman.
Think about when I met her. Yeah. What about one of those little boys he called that showed in the first issue of the Hickman run?
It is very disturbing to the wizard's character.
Disturbing? Something awful about this man.
My favorite panel from this arc is in issue 515 when Reed is punching the wizard and saying, "You attack my wife, yet you call yourself a genius," which was a cool image of Reed punching and a nice little quip. And it also sets up a Reed being protective of Sue angle we'll see throughout these comics. It was very funny. Next arc, we see Reed showing up with a big gun to rescue Sue. And that's not an unheard of thing for Reed to do, especially in the 90s. But I always like when Reed bust out some big science gun, like he's Cable or something.
We're talking like big action figure gun. Huge. Like, awesome.
Well, Matt, did you feel sad when the wizard betrayed Trapster, aka Paste Pot Pete, in the middle of this issue?
The Trapster, man, I liked him. He's got his hoverboard thing, which was neat. He's just there tinkering away trying to trap people. That's his whole gimmick. He likes to set traps.
I did think it was pretty funny that Wizard betraying Trapster does set up in the following issue that Cole betrays Wizard by using one of Trapster's glue traps on the Wizard, which was a neat little trade-off.
My favorite panel's weird, but I'm just going to explain. It's in issue 516, and there's a sequence where Hydro Man has actually been Salamandra's bathwater. And Wade does a fantastic job of keeping it vague, but the innuendo is totally there. It's gross, but it's so weird. That's the sleazy stuff they do.
What it does raise interesting questions about Hydro Man. Does he actually derive satisfaction from being someone's bathwater? Or is it just, I'm just water. It doesn't mean anything to me.
Does he get some gratification out of it? I don't know. It's weird. It's very weird.
Deep questions about the psychic makeup of Hydro Man that we're left with. I feel like we have a lot of deep questions about Wizard's psychosexual desires answered in this arc, but Hydro Man remains sort of a mystery to us.
Yeah, we need some Hydro Man fanfiction, guys.
Well, to quickly move on to the next arc, Matt, it's issues 517.
Before we move on, Bob, I got to point out that there's one issue, one thing at the end of this issue that I didn't really like. I didn't put this in the notes. But Cole, man, they blow her up huge and make her scary looking. Her powers cause her body to, I don't know, mutate or something. Towards the end, they make her look gigantic on top of the wizard's hideout, which she's pulled from the ground. And she's totally naked up there. It's weird. I don't know why they went with that.
It's a little bit King Kong or Attack of the 50-Foot Woman vibes.
Yeah, it was a little creepy for this comic.
One thing I will praise about the end of the arc is I do like that the comic presents the wizard as the only one who's not skeeved out by Cole's true form and her powers. As much as we've dunked on the wizard, and rightfully so, for being a weird freak, a very coercive freak in these issues, him loving his daughter for the mutation, although not in a healthy way. And not
he wants to use it to his advantage.
Exactly. But nonetheless, him appreciating his daughter because of all that is an interesting character dynamic.
We're going to move on to the next.
The next arc is Fortitude. It's issues 517 through 519. What goes down in those issues, Matt?
A massive fleet of alien spacecraft cuts off Manhattan from the rest of the world, and the city turns to the Fantastic Four for help.
I forgot to put this in the notes, but this is an Avengers Disassembled tie-in. Do you remember what Avengers Disassembled was?
Didn't Scarlet Witch do something to do with her?
Yeah, you've spoiled Avengers Disassembled, Matt, for all those who have not read it. I actually have never read it. I just know about it in general from reading comics around the time. But it was the big arc where Brian Bendis comes on the Avengers book, and he kills a lot of Avengers. I think Hawkeye gets killed in it and a couple of other Avengers besides. And it's a mysterious force is attacking the Avengers. And then the reveal, I think, at the end of the arc is that the Scarlet Witch is the mysterious force who's been attacking the Avengers.
I vaguely remember like reading at this at some point or reading parts of it just in passing.
It is worth commemorating Avengers Disassembled as I think you could say, and I say this with no affection for the old Avengers, but I think you could say that it marks an era change of the last comic to really do like a classic Avengers team. That's Captain America, Hawkeye, Iron Man, Scarlet Witch, Vision, Jack of Hearts, those type of people. And going forward, Bendis makes the new Avengers, and the new Avengers has Spider-Man and Wolverine and eventually Daredevil, The Thing, Luke Cage, Doctor Strange on the Avengers. And it's a transition away from there used to be this whole roster of Avengers characters who were their own corner of the Marvel Universe. Then you return to that original idea that the Avengers were the Justice League of America for Marvel, which was they were all the biggest heroes, which in the 60s was Thor and Iron Man. But in the 2000s, Spider-Man, Wolverine, and Iron Man. Disassembled marks that transition. Although all that aside, this book doesn't really tie in to Avengers Disassembled at all, other than the fact that the Avengers aren't around, so that FF has to take the brunt of this one.
It's used as an excuse for why Captain America didn't show up to help with this, which, like,
that's
why
aren't they there? That's the perfect way to do a tie-in. I can get my favorite panel out of the way early for this one. It's early in 517.
That's not the first page.
We see Ben going around doing Halloween, and he's dressed as the Human Torch, which really made me laugh. I thought that was hilarious. And we also see two little black kids going around as 1970s Luke Cage and 1970s Storm. I thought all that was awesome. I really like that page.
That is a good page at the beginning. And like I said earlier, it's the Fantastic Four doing this family stuff. Just cool. You don't see that in other comics. You don't see Batman doing that with Damian. Maybe you see Superman taking his kid out for trick-or-treating.
Definitely. The FF did, at least. What was your favorite panel from this arc, Matt?
Mine's way further down, Bob. It's in issue 519. So let me, just to fill the listeners in a little bit. So this dude, Zaius, he is invading Earth because he needs Sue Storm. Because her invisible powers are what allow, potentially could allow Galactus to see invisible worlds that were using some type of cloaking technology. And he needs Sue as his new herald, right?
Very much so.
Perfect. All right. So anyway, this all ends up in a big battle where they're fighting and Reed shows up with the big gun, shoots Zaius. But on national television, he's shooing him a new one, telling him if he ever threatens his family, he's going to go off. And then directly below that panel, you see just like random people watching TV, happy for the Fantastic Four again, which I think was a signal that hold their back in the good graces of the people, which I thought was cool. A very subtle way to do that.
That's a good point. I didn't even think about that, but you're exactly right that this arc is bringing us full circle because we talked about that water park arc last time, right? Where Human Torch, you know, has a friend date with Spider-Man, and he's just like, how do you do it, Spidey? How do you go around with everybody hating you? Because everybody hates the FF after the events of Unthinkable and Authoritative Action. So this is a good way to bring the Wade run full circle with the FF regaining popular acclaim.
And Reed's words are, and know this, wherever your journey next takes you, whatever races you encounter, if it ever comes back to me that you have referred to any part of Earth as a mere anthill, the Fantastic Four will make you regret it.
Reed cutting a wrestling promo.
Yeah, Reed doing a shoot.
We have two big reveals at the end of this arc. We have the reveal that Reed switched Sue and Johnny's power to solve the problem with a big gun, a cable light gun, to solve the problem of Zaius wanting Sue's powers or wanting Sue for her powers. Which I also, as an aside, I just want to say is a classic Reed solution in that it both solves the problem and doesn't think of the immediate consequences of it as a solution.
Creates a whole different problem.
Exactly. So that's one twist. And then the second twist is that Galactus is now going to make Johnny his herald precisely because he wants Sue's powers as for his herald. So between these two, Matt, which of these swerves surprised you more?
I was very surprised about the herald thing, because Galactus becomes a herald. A little bit of a spoiler there, which is interesting. So I feel like this is always something they go to in Fantastic Four. Who is the herald of Galactus? Now, the Sue and Johnny switching powers, that's just Fantastic Four hijinks we see all the time.
That's a good point. On the one hand, it seems like it would be. On the other hand, I don't know that we ever actually have seen it before. Now, there's a lot of FF I haven't read, and there's also a lot of bad FF. So it's entirely possible that it had been done in the 500 issues.
Yeah, sure has.
Wade does spend so much time with it. I could see it being a new thing that he's, why did nobody else think of this before me, and just runs with it.
Well, he does it well, though, too, Bob. I can see them doing it in like single issues that would just suck. A single issue where they all switch powers, just keep going back and forth.
To give context for readers, and also if readers disagree with me, feel free to reach out. I'd be curious to hear if there's stuff I haven't read from the 20th century of the FF that I should. But I think the 1960s Jack Kirby Stan Lee run on Fantastic Four is amazing. It's beautiful. I would love to cover it with Matt at some point in the future, although it would take at least 4 or 5, maybe 10 episodes to do because it's so long. But maybe down the line, that's something we could think about. Love that run. I think like everything in between that run and Walt Simonson coming on the book is really bad. I have read some of it. I've read some of the Marv Wolfman stuff. I've read some of the Roy Thomas stuff. I've read some of the, I think, Lynn Wein stuff. I don't like any of it. And usually people just say it's everything in between Jack Kirby and John Byrne is bad. But I don't like the John Byrne stuff on FF either. I think it's real bad. Maybe all this power swapping stuff does happened before, but nothing's coming to mind for me.
Knowing the Herald of Galactus seems like an ongoing thing that we've seen forever. We have so many different versions and ones.
That's a big deal in at least two stories in the Kirby run. It's a big deal. The first Galactus story that's not drawn by Kirby, while I think Buscema draws it, but Lee is still on the book. It also involves the Angel Gabriel. It's a big story in the John Byrne run. Yeah, who's the Herald of Galactus? That's a perennial FF trope. You're exactly right about that.
The Angel Gabriel shows up. Is he related to the Jack Kirby god they met in the other story?
No.
Same dimension.
Let me just say, it's not a great comic, and I don't think we would ever revisit it, but I still don't want to spoil it. Let's just say all is not as it appears to be with the Angel Gabriel.
Gotcha. All right, Bob. Well,
should we move on to the final arc here, Rising Storm and issues 520 to 523?
Rising Storm. So of the three arcs, Bob, I really, really liked the first two arcs. The third arc, it's fun. It's kind of weird, though. A little bit wacky.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't dislike any of these, but of these, I prefer Rising Storm more than the other two.
Yeah, I don't dislike it. It's just of the three, it's the weakest.
It's longer, but I guess it's only slightly longer. It's only 4 or 5 issues, depending on how you count it, compared to three.
In Rising Storm, as the new Herald of Galactus with Sue's powers, Johnny must seek out worlds for his master, while the rest of the FF devise a way to rescue him. Now, Bob, I enjoyed most of these issues, but the plot involving Galen, who is Galactus' human form, I didn't quite understand that part.
This comic sort of explains this, but just to emphasize it, and this is an idea I'm pretty sure well before this comic. So I can't remember what version of the universe, but I think in Marvel continuity, this version of the universe we're on that started with the Big Bang, our Big Bang is the fifth version of the universe. I might have the number wrong, but I think it's the fifth version. Galen was a scientist in the fourth version of the universe, and he's the only survivor, although I think that eventually gets retconned and his mom also survives. But he's the only survivor of the fourth universe. He was a humanoid scientist in the fourth universe. The Big Bang happened. A new fifth universe was reborn. In that rebirth, Galen survives and becomes Galactus.
And I got a little confused with, he gets like an incubator type thing for like millions of years. He turns into this big purple thing, like the purple humanoid form. But then Johnny makes
just to interrupt, real shades of John Byrne's Krypton birth matrix for Superman.
Very much so.
Can I insert one other little parenthetical that I just realized and I thought was really weird?
Go right ahead.
So do you know why John Byrne did the Krypton birth matrix in Superman?
Because he didn't want any other survivors coming from Krypton other than Kal-El. And also the distance is crazy, so that it would make more sense for him to be born within that chamber as opposed
but
to...
What identity does Superman have that might be salient in current politics? In the Silver Age, Matt, you would have to say that Superman is an illegal immigrant.
Yes.
So why did that? It's one of the reasons. No.
It was a science thing. It was the distance it would take to get from Krypton. They're talking about light years. They said you couldn't send a kid. It would be a billion years old by the time it got to Earth.
Go on John Byrne's Wikipedia page, look under the controversy section, and look about what the man has said about immigrants.
Okay.
And look about what he said about Superman is just an American. Everything that's good about him comes from Earth. Krypton doesn't matter.
Oh, like, crap.
Yeah, you're right that it also is, it is another way to kind of make Krypton not matter because it's, oh, the only way it worked was for this birthing matrix, so that wouldn't apply to Supergirl or anyone else.
Right.
Also, it's just a sci-fi gimmick. But one of the real reasons that Byrne wants to do it is that he's this real anti-immigrant bigot.
Well, that makes me sad. Now I just feel like, it's icky.
I still do think we ought to look at the Byrne Superman run at some point in the distant future because it's fun and it's interesting and it's a lot better than its Fantastic Four run. I'll tell you that for free.
Nice.
But no, that like learning that, it really did tarnish one of my favorite comics from my childhood. Oh, this is totally an anti-immigrant move, and I see why now.
Well, thank you for tarnishing my childhood, Bob, because I would not have looked up John Byrne on the Wikipedia.
Well, the reason I did it was I definitely don't want to do the John Byrne run on Fantastic Four, but I do want to do the Walt Simonson run pretty soon. And the Walt Simonson run somewhat follows up on John Byrne's Galactus' story. And so I was, should we do the John Byrne Galactus story? And I was looking back at the John Byrne Galactus story and no, we should not do the John Byrne Galactus. I didn't like the John Byrne Galactus story when I first read it. It's actually the thing that made me hate the run was I thought his Galactus story was really bad. But I was like, would that at least be interesting radio, even though I hate it, to do it? But in the course of thinking about that, I was looking at Byrne's Wikipedia article, and I saw that section on controversies, and I was just like, oh my God.
Wow.
It really changes Man of Steel.
Yeah, it messes it up a lot. Well, Bob, let's get back to Galactus in Rising Storm. My thought is that Galactus, Johnny mentions at one point that Galactus, the visualization of him is whatever humans like see him as or something like that, that the actual form that he had in his other universe, we would never be able to understand or visualize or be able to conceive of. And it reminded me a little bit of like Babylon 5 with the Vorlons.
That's cool. My understanding is slightly different than what you said, but you might be right and I might be wrong. My understanding is that Galen in the fourth universe was humanoid, basically humanoid, right? Not human, but humanoid. And then my understanding is that in the fifth universe, having gone through this transformation into Galactus, Galen as Galactus is so far beyond us. And Galactus is basically just God. This is regularly how he's dealt with, right? And so the way we perceive and Johnny perceives Galactus is as this giant guy in a silly, wonderful, but silly purple costume. But his actual form is so much beyond that. That's the way I understand it, which is slightly different than what you said, but I could be wrong.
We're pretty much in the same area as far as that works. Everybody does see him as the big purple guy.
Was it the issue 523 when Galen reverts to being human or humanoid.
Yes.
That's the issue you didn't really dig.
That's the part I don't like. It's just the whole idea of Galen. The way they work with him and do everything on Earth, for one thing, it's very expedited. It's quick. That's one issue. And it's him on Earth. He gets to go to a bar. He does some other things. And then he exiles himself into this dimension to be by himself.
What I would say, and one reason I think this doesn't bother me as much as it bothers you, I could see from your perspective it is annoying. The Galen becoming human is a riff on Silver Surfer bonding with Alicia Masters during the original Galactus story.
Right, they tried to redo that, and they even mentioned that in the stupid story. It's too on the nose.
Although I think the difference is interesting of, I could be wrong, I haven't revisited the Galactus trilogy in probably about 5 years. Great, great story, listeners. Pete, you should read it if you haven't. But I feel like in that original story, maybe Silver Surfer spends like 4 pages with Alicia. So you're saying that Galen as a human is too short, but it's already, at least in my memory, which may be wrong, it's so much longer.
Right. Wow.
That Silver Surfer spends with Alicia. I thought it was interesting. I do think Galen / Galactus's reason for not attacking Earth at the end of 523 is maybe a little labored, and I didn't quite follow the logic, but I did appreciate that Reed and Ben and the other members are trying to make Galen have this sentimental human attachment to Earth like Silver Surfer does, and it's just not going to work for Galen. No. That's not how he's built. I did think that aspect of the dynamic was really cool. That and the reference were enough to make me fond of the Galen stuff on Earth. That and the idea of Galen trying to eat an eight ball, that really made me laugh.
That was one good scene of him trying to eat the eight ball.
Matt, we skipped way ahead, but I did just want to say I love that Ben calls Galactus's heralds his Mater D's. That really made me laugh. And the Galactus ship is drawn different every time it shows up. And for all I know, maybe it's always a different ship. But I did think it was interesting that the way Mike Waringo drew it in this arc, it sort of looked like a white Death Star.
That's exactly what it looked like. I thought it was lame. If they're going to come up with a ship, let's not make it look like the Death Star. It's just a ball. I mean, come on. Be creative.
And then I did want to say my favorite panel from these issues was from the first issue in the arc. When this is, you know, one of the things that's going on in that first issue is with Johnny having been enlisted as Galactus's Mater D, everybody's sad about Johnny being gone and everybody's flashing back to sweet memories with Johnny. And so we see a flashback of Ben on his first date with Alicia, not knowing how to do it. Johnny outside on the roof aside, writing directions in fire in the sky, which was really sweet.
Yeah. Well, Bob, my favorite panel is one that you had in the notes. It's when Johnny accidentally cracks open Kerrigan's chest and you see his insides, and then he puts him back together with the cosmic power. He literally splits Kerrigan in two down the center. It's disgusting. And then puts him back together.
It cracks him open like a wishbone or something. Yeah. That was a really cool image and I liked it. I did want to say that maybe if I had a slight problem with this arc, it's on the one hand, I like the idea of Johnny as the Herald of Galactus. And on the one hand, I like Johnny with Sue's powers and vice versa. And I like them both having problems controlling the powers.
Right.
But I wonder if like mixing the two together isn't, on the one hand, I know in comic storytelling, especially superhero comic storytelling, you do want to build and magnify and amplify. But I do wonder if maybe by putting those two together, you get less effect than you might from just having than be different stories or different situations.
As we continue on in this particular arc, they replace Johnny pretty quick.
They did. And I was thinking about this more, and one reason that maybe Wade doesn't let Human Torch Galactus's Herald with Human Torch powers is, and this goes back to the John Byrne Galactus story, in that, or at least around that, you have Johnny has a girlfriend with Human Torch powers, or similar powers at least to Human Torch, and she becomes the Herald of Galactus for a while. We already have seen a Human Torch be a Herald of Galactus.
Yeah, I remember that action figure.
Frankie Ray, aka Nova.
We do have Kazar here. I don't have a clue what he does, Bob. Do you have any?
I have no clue, Matt. Yeah, although it does give a great line from Johnny of, you replaced me already with Kazar. But yeah, Quasar's been in some Marvel cosmic stuff I've read. I think his big time were the 90s. He had a long running ongoing series in the 90s. Barry Allen became a supporting character in his 90s, in Quasar's 90s series. They never referred to him as Barry Allen, but clearly, apparently it was Barry Allen after Barry Allen died in Crisis. So he switched universes and he's in the Marvel universe. But I've never read the Quasar series. I don't know anything about Quasar. I guess he's just generic cosmic Superman, but I don't know.
I looked it up and he literally has these bands that are fused to his wrist and he can shoot stuff from the quantum zone.
He's the replacement for Marvel's Captain Marvel. Because are those bands like the Captain Marvel bands?
I don't know how to put that together a little faster. I'm getting older.
Well, Matt, you don't know everything about and celebrate Marvel's Captain Marvel, the one before Carol Danvers?
But the quantum thing and the wristbands, I should know this. I don't know why it didn't click.
Why?
But,
well, man, speaking of Marvel trivia that we actually do know, did you catch that Reed calls the Big Bang the Phoenix Force?
That was insane. Do you think that could possibly be?
Especially because the Phoenix Force in the X-Men comics is really strongly associated with creation, destruction, but then recreation. I don't know how far along that association was in the X-Men comics by this point, because this is about the same time, actually a little after the Morrison X-Men run. So yeah, I think that idea is well anchored already in the X-Men comics. I don't think it's original to Wade.
It'd be really weird to live on a Marvel Earth, Bob, because you got Galactus showing up, then you got the Phoenix Force coming, just destroying everything. Like, so many things going on. It'd be rough to live there.
They're all just going to this world.
Yeah. Everybody wants Earth for some reason.
We've got an epilogue issue called Tag, which 523 directly continues into 524 Tag. So you could count it as part of the Rising Storm arc, or you could deal with it separately. We'll deal with it separately. But I did just want to say about Tag, I do think the name Tag is hilarious for two reasons. I mean, it basically does describe what the FF are trying to do, which you're about to describe in this issue. But it's also really funny because it's Mark Waid and Mike Waringo tagging out on the FF, right? They're tagging somebody else in. And I think Dwayne McDuffie's, it's a short run, but I think it's a pretty good run. It also might be a run worth looking at some point. But anyway, we had the tag out. So what goes down in the tag out, Matt?
While trying to return Sue and Johnny's powers to their rightful bodies, Reed's machine malfunctions, causing all members to lose their special abilities.
And so random New Yorkers get these powers, right?
Random people. And they don't stay with certain people. They keep bouncing around. So one guy will have stretch powers for a couple of minutes, and then it'll bounce out of them and go to someone else.
What's your favorite power recipient?
My favorite power recipient was, there was a stripper who got invisible powers. So you had a bunch of people leave the strip club because they couldn't see anything. That was very creative.
That was fun. And speaking of things that appeal to you, Matt, did you catch the panel where Reed has his equation notes written on his glove?
I did. After we figure out the story where Ben switches out the gloves, I went back to check, and yeah, it's the glove. And I didn't catch it the first time. I saw it on a piece of paper or something.
Yeah, because we actually, or at least the first time I saw it, it's Reed's glove, but Ben has already taken the glove.
Right.
But it's got Reed's equations written on it.
This was a fun issue, and I love their flying motorcycles. I remember those in some other medium. I don't remember what, but they had these flying motorcycles in that other medium. It was always so cool.
You might be thinking of like the way the Fantasticar splits.
It used to split. You're right. I think part of it did split like that.
Yeah, but they have both the Fantasticar and the flying motorcycles. I'm sure when I was a kid, I knew the difference and why you would use one then and one now, but I don't know what the difference is anymore. Basically, you get to see the Fantastic Four on their flying motorcycles chasing their powers and re-catching their powers all over town. And then the climax is that Reed is going to take this opportunity and he's going to try and catch the Thing powers, which is a nice way of continuing to go with Reed's guilt for what's happened to Ben and for the fact that he hasn't been able to cure Ben. Get something of a resolution, and not a full resolution, but something of a resolution in the Hickman run that I think we both really appreciated. But here, Reed's going to catch the Thing powers for himself to spare. And Ben is flying his motorcycle in the New York City subway tunnel. And he's stolen Reed's glove. And he's berating him for being selfish. And he's like, how will you invent anything if you have my fingers? I'm the one who knows how to handle this. Don't be an idiot. Don't be selfish. Which is, you know, there is the problem of the Fantastic Four in all Marvel comics. If you always just have to revert back to the status quo. But the best writers usually manage to make their status quo reversions feel emotional and, oh, there's a reason it's got to go back to that. Wade does that here, so I really like that.
And there was a major piece of foreshadowing in an earlier issue, Bob, that really pointed this out and hit this home. It's when Thing is on the telephone And he makes the point that Reed made the telephone big enough for him to use his hands and be able to push the buttons.
I think that was even set up in an earlier scene, a couple arcs back, where we see Ben crush another phone.
He did. You're right. So it's even further back as far. Wow. See, this is good storytelling, folks.
Brave man. He's one of the best. I don't love everything he does, like Kingdom Come, not a favorite of mine. Nah. But the man is one of our great writers. I'm really glad he got to do this run with Ringo. I think this is the last major superhero run Mike Ringo had. I think he died pretty young, not long after this. Thanks for going on the Mark Waid journey with me. This is my far and away my second favorite Fantastic Four run.
Let's talk about rankings. If you want to go over for the listeners, at number one right now, we have Fantastic Four by Jonathan Hickman, his 2009 to 2012 run. We have Doom 24 as number two with Jonathan Hickman. And Bob, I would suggest we put this at number three before Boy Wonder, but after Doom.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I was actually a little surprised that you wanted to rank it so high, Matt, especially because you were a little grumpy about Hereafter for understandable reasons.
Hereafter's stupid, but that's okay. Hereafter is controversial. Let's just put it that way. When you meet God and then you go around acting and just you have a dimension to God and a machine that can take you to God, and then you're not going to use that to help yourself. It's just hard for me to fathom that.
Just to run down a little more. So we originally had Hickman number one with Fantastic Four, Hickman and Sanford Green number two with Doom. Then Junie Ba's Boy Wonder at three, Christian Ward's City of Madness at four, and Deanie and Dustin Nguyen's Detective Comics at number five. And I was originally going to just argue for putting it below Christian Ward's Batman City of Madness and above Paul Deanie and Dustin Nguyen's Detective Comics, because I thought you would maybe be less charitably inclined to it. And it is an interesting thing. So we talked about Boy Wonder and City of Madness. Both are great comics, but both are also only 3-4 issues. So there's a tightness to them. And on the one hand, that tightness means that there's no missteps to either
Correct.
Of those
things. Exactly.
But on the other hand, so there's definitely missteps in this Mark Waid, Mike Ringo Fantastic Four run. But on the other hand, because it's got six trades or two big trades, it has a depth that Boy Wonder and City of Madness just can't achieve in their short runs. I could see arguments for the Waid Ringo Fantastic Four going above or below Boy Wonder and City of Madness, but I lean towards above, and it sounds like you lean towards above as well.
It should be the new number three on our list. And looking at our list as a whole, I love it. The way you just described it, Bob, and how these arcs that we're covering, they can go either way. If your arc sucks from the get-go and doesn't get better, it's just going to bomb. We see that somewhat with some of these Gotham Knights with A.J. Lieberman. I mean, they were not great.
Well, it is just funny, too, that now our list, which is now 15 items, the top three items are all Fantastic Four comics, and then the bottom three items are all Gotham Knights comics. There's a funny symmetry there.
And both are considered... It, technically, Gotham Knights is supposed to be like a Bat family book.
Yeah, they're both team books.
So we have two team books on opposite ends of our spectrum. So here's how to do a team right with the Fantastic Four and how not to do one as great with Gotham Knights. I will say there are some good things in Gotham Knights. I don't want to say Gotham Knights is terrible because we're only covering 15 things here. We're not 200. Then you can really look at these rankings. But right now, Gotham Knights at the bottom, there's still some jewels in there somewhere to find.
I would say the all three Gotham Knights runs are at the very least very interesting.
Yeah.
The Lieberman run is not good, but the Grayson run is pretty good, and the Beatty run is okay, and all three are quite interesting.
The only outlier here that I'd love is the Doom 24 single issue. Doesn't really fit your standard, just a good issue.
Need that.
No need for a long run, no need for a short trade, but just one single issue, bam, you're number two.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, Matt, because looking at this list, it's, oh man, it's basically just all Fantastic Four and Batman stuff. And on the one hand, I'm like, well, we should really rank other stuff in order to increase the diversity of characters. But on the other hand, it would be funny just to keep going with the Fantastic Four. Well, listeners, I think the next thing we're going to do is we're maybe going to cover the Predator animated movie that's coming out soon. And I think we're definitely going to cover the two Archie versus Predator comics, which are quite, quite funny. So that'll add some diversity to our list, at least in terms of theme and characters. And then I wanted to lobby Matt. I don't know if you'd be amenable to another run, but my other favorite Fantastic Four run, my three favorites are Hickman, Waid, and then Walt Simonson's early 90s run. And Simonson's late 80s, early 90s run, we could do in three episodes if you'd be amenable to that.
Let's go ahead and do that. I started Marvel Knights. It's the Fantastic Four.
It's
is, it's hard to read incongruence with this. It's not like they don't line up very well. And they're not fun. It's not the same.
It's also wild because the artist on Marvel Knights Fantastic Four is Steve McNiven, who's the Civil War art. He's a big event. I mean, he wasn't in the early aughts when he got the job for Marvel Knights Fantastic Four, but that's what he would become. And he's kind of the wrong artist for that comic. Not that McNiven's a bad artist, just the thing that Era Sikarsa, the writer, is going for is not really what McNiven is set up well to draw. So we definitely will not revisit the Marvel Knights Fantastic Four. Fair. Look for us to do the Walt Simonson run soon, listeners. Thanks for joining us on this Mark Waid, Mike Waringo Fantastic Four journey. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Have a great night, everybody.
Thanks for listening.